The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA has an array of art classes and programs for all ages and skill levels this summer, including day camps for kids, pre-college programs for teens, and classes and workshops for adults in drawing, painting, sculpture, printmaking, and more. Workshops include a masterclass in June with renowned painter and PAFA faculty member Jan Baltzel. Registration now underway for summer classes. For more information, pafa.org/community education.
A company whose gas well exploded last year in western Pennsylvania will pay just under $1 million in fines for the accident. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. First up, Chevron Appalachia, the natural gas drilling arm of Chevron Corporation, was fined for violations relating to the explosion, which killed one contractor. State Impact Pennsylvania's Katie Culinary starts off our show.
The fire burned in a small town in southwest Pennsylvania for several days, but it took more than a week to find the remains of Ian McKee, a young contractor who was killed in the blast. State investigators ruled the explosion had been caused by human error and faulted Chevron for poorly supervising workers on the site. Chevron has agreed to pay $940,000 for multiple environmental violations. The DEP says it's among the largest penalties the agency has ever levied against a company. However, DEP spokesman John Poister says Chevron will not face fines for blocking state regulators from accessing the explosion site for nearly 2 days.
We felt that we had sent a message to Chevron and to the industry that that's not going to be acceptable behavior, and we believe that that message has been received.
Fines are the result of months-long negotiations with violators, and former Environmental Protection Secretary David Hess says under that system, not every violation results in a fine from DEP.
They came to a judgment, apparently, that that wasn't as big an issue as they thought, perhaps because of the safety issues that were involved.
Chevron has also agreed to pay $5 million to settle a wrongful death suit with Ian McKee's family. Katie Culinary, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
What happens if the Supreme Court strikes down financial assistance for hundreds of thousands of residents in our region covered through the Affordable Care Act's online marketplace? A ruling is expected this month, but as WHYY's Alana Gordon reports, Pennsylvania and Delaware are taking some unusual steps in preparation.
Nearly 400,000 Pennsylvanians have qualified for income-based subsidies to buy coverage through the Affordable Care Act's online marketplace. That includes Catherine Ryan, a 27-year-old restaurant server in Philadelphia.
I was excited because if it weren't for Obamacare, I wouldn't be insured at all. I wouldn't have the ability to go to the doctor, which is pretty crazy.
Ryan says she can afford the coverage thanks to a $200 discount on her monthly premium. But she and others are at risk of losing that. A lawsuit the Supreme Court is slated to rule on this month argues such discounts apply only to states with their own marketplaces, not states with federal ones like Delaware, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. But Pennsylvania has a contingency plan.
My biggest concern is, do we have a fallback if we need it?
Governor Tom Wolf is submitting a proposal to the federal government today that, if approved, would make Pennsylvania a state-based marketplace. It would still use the federal IT platform. Wolf stresses this is all non-binding and hinges on what the court rules. But the move is unusual.
Pennsylvania stands out.
Joel Ario, a healthcare consultant and former insurance official, says states may be exploring options behind the scenes, but to support an actual plan?
In about a third of the states, that is a political non-starter today, because it does mean standing up and saying, I want to work with this law in a public way as a state-based exchange.
That could prove difficult even if the court actually strikes down the subsidies. Health officials in Delaware have submitted a similar contingency plan. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
The Philadelphia Orchestra is entering its third and final week of a European tour. WHYY's Peter Crimmins is following them and reports that the orchestra is being well received abroad.
You may have seen the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, but you've never heard it. The historic cracked bell is too fragile to ring, but if you could hear it, it would sound like this.
Between an E and E-flat, the tone would be an E for this bell.
This is Philippe Picard of the Picard Bell Foundry in Lyon, which created an exact replica of the Liberty Bell for this visit by the Philadelphia Orchestra. Picard's factory is known for its musical bells, precisely tuned to be used in an orchestra percussion section. The Liberty Bell was never intended for that.
The bell that you have heard on stage, the harmonics are perfectly tuned, that it creates a very warm and nice and beautiful sound, moving sound, that you don't get with this one.
65 years ago, Picard's grandfather was hired by the U.S. government to make 50 replicas of the Liberty Bell, one for each state capital. So Picard seized this opportunity to present the visiting Philadelphians with their own history at the Auditorium Lyon, where the orchestra performed a program of Beethoven and Rachmaninoff. Pennsylvania and Philadelphia officials arrived at this concert to meet with counterparts from the city of Lyon and the region of Rhone Alps to talk business. Philadelphia Deputy Mayor Alan Greenberger says the orchestra is a great icebreaker for the Americans and the French to discuss economic development partnerships.
It's all about creating deeper cultural connections between two cities so that there can also be deeper business connections, social connections. It's how the world works. It's how the world should work.
The audience in Lyon gave the musicians a robust appreciation, as have audiences in all the cities the orchestra visited on this tour. And the orchestra is on a tight schedule. In 20 days, they will travel through 10 cities to play 14 concerts, and that does not include the unannounced pop-up concerts some musicians have agreed to perform. As most of the orchestra moved on from Lyon to Paris, a few stayed behind to play as small ensembles in the Plaza Louis Pradel. First Associate Concertmaster Juliet Kang joined a string quartet to play Mendelssohn in the park.
It's fun because we're outside. It's gorgeous. There are some people listening, some not. But, like, truly, the music, just getting together and playing together is so much, so gratifying.
The quartet faced plenty of distractions, including a siren from a passing ambulance and a group of young men just a few feet away practicing parkour, a kind of urban gymnastics. Violinist Paul Arnold took it all in stride.
It's a challenge, but it's a nice challenge. You know, you have to sort of find the center of your tone, and I never quite did.
The tour does include an occasional day off, so musicians can take a break from the grind of travel and performance. For example, they were in Paris during the French Open, the tennis tournament, and so many musicians secured tickets months in advance. Carol Yanch, the tuba player, ran a half marathon along the Seine.
I just think it's a great way to see a city. Sometimes we don't have a whole lot of time for sightseeing, and so just a good way to, like, experience a town.
Yanch is an experienced runner with several half marathons under her belt, and when she runs alone, she tends to listen to music, but as she says, anything but classical.
Upbeat, kind of pop stuff, just like popular music from when I was in college and stuff like that.
At 30 years old, Yanch is one of the younger musicians in the orchestra. She was joined on the marathon by one of the veteran members, concertmaster David Kim, who celebrated his 52nd birthday on this tour.
You know, touring itself is such a special experience, and not one that really that many orchestral musicians can experience, because most orchestras can't afford to do this, nor are they desired around the world. And then it's tiring, rehearsals, travel. It's kind of this quest for special extra experiences, like that great little wine bar on a little alley, or finishing a half marathon.
Kim and Yanch both finished the half marathon in a respectable 2.5 hours, and then the next morning they flew to Vienna to play 2 concerts. In Paris, and then Vienna, I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Peter's coverage of the orchestra tour is funded by Visit Philadelphia. You can find them online at visitphilly.com. Taking a look at this evening's headlines, 2 senior officials at the Department of Veterans Affairs have been suspended after an audit found they charged subordinates money to attend a work-related party that featured psychic readings. In a notice to Congress, the VA said it had temporarily suspended Lucy Filipov, assistant director of the Philadelphia office, and Gary Hodge, who heads the Pension Management Center. Both would remain on the VA payroll pending an internal review. The Pennsylvania State House today began considering amendments to a budget bill, though Republicans who control the chamber say the real goal is to have bills moving in time to pass by the June 30th deadline. And that means the legislation they're amending will be drastically rewritten when and if negotiations reach a deal with the Senate and Governor Tom Wolf. 3/4 of New Jersey teachers are rated as effective under a new system that attempts to be more specific about educators' strengths and weaknesses, though 13% of students were instructed at some point by teachers deemed ineffective or partially effective, and teachers with either of those ratings must go through corrective action plans. Rain falling on Independence Mall, 65 degrees at 6:16. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. A flash flood watch in effect through this evening. Rain heavy at times, tonight's low 60 degrees. Showers likely into tomorrow morning, a chance of rain in the afternoon. Tuesday's high 70, and then enjoy partly sunny days Wednesday and Thursday, high both days in the low 70s. Still ahead.
We see no liquid water on the surface of Mars now at all, anywhere. Dry, absolutely bone dry. But at Europa, it's a totally different situation.
We're beaming up to one of Jupiter's moons on Newsworks Tonight after this break.
Newman University supports WHYY and encourages listeners to discover how a master's degree in pastoral clinical mental health counseling can help prepare adults for professional licensure and roles in community counseling. Designed to integrate psychology and spirituality, this ecumenical program is open to people of all faith traditions. There's an information session on June 3rd at Newman's campus in Delaware County. Details are available at newman.edu.
Hi, I'm Chris Satullo. Here at WHYY, we work hard to provide you with top-notch journalism, riveting stories, and programs worth listening to. If you listen for only a few hours a week over the course of a year, it adds up. It's the equivalent of seeing 100 movies or 50 baseball games. So you've received a lot of value from WHYY, and we'd like to ask you now to please give back. Make a donation before June 30th and help us reach our goals. Join at WHYY.org.
Thomas Jefferson University Hospital supports WHYY. Jefferson's Heart and Vascular Program treats a range of cardiovascular disease with a combination of personalized care and advanced therapies. Jefferson cardiologists specialize in treating the most complex cases and are experienced in non-surgical approaches, helping more patients avoid open-heart surgery. For more information, 1-800-JEFF-NOW or jefferson.edu. Thomas Jefferson University Hospital, 1-800-JEFF-NOW.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. The intrigue over liquid water on heavenly bodies beyond Earth is compelling NASA to set sail for Jupiter. Let's climb aboard with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. And Derek, specifically, it's one of Jupiter's inner moons.
It is. It's Europa that NASA would like to investigate. And they have a really good reason why they want to investigate it. This is a world that has an ice crust surface. And underneath the ice crust surface is an ocean of liquid water, easily as deep as the oceans here on Earth.
Oceans.
Oceans of liquid water. H2O, you know, the kind of stuff that we drink every day. Yeah, that sort of stuff.
So very different than what we see on the surface of Mars, being remnants of what looked like were once riverbeds, but not now.
Yes, an entirely different kind of scenario, whereas Mars definitely shows that in its distant history, there was plenty of water on the surface. We see no liquid water on the surface of Mars now at all, anywhere. Dry, absolutely bone dry. But at Europa, it's a totally different situation. Europa's much farther away from the sun. In fact, it gets more heat from Jupiter than it gets from the sun. So at that distance, you would imagine that if there were any water, it would be frozen. But in fact, it isn't. The water that's on Europa is kept warm by the tidal effect of the giant planet Jupiter pulling on it and all of its brethren moons, some 60 plus, pulling in the other direction. So as it orbits Jupiter, the interior of the planet stays warm and the liquid water can remain as a liquid. In fact, it's actually salty liquid water.
Interesting. Where there's water, there's water.
Well, there could possibly be something else as well. If we take a look at the deepest ocean regions here on Earth, places where there's absolutely no sunlight, the water pressure is so intense that it can easily crush the hull of any submarine without any problem. One would expect very few nutrients. Yet there's an incredible abundance of life at these extreme depths here in our oceans. So now, if we were to take a look at this ocean world with the frozen crust of Europa, we find a very similar sort of a situation. No light, liquid water, it's above freezing, salty. Isn't there the slightest possibility that there could at least be organic substances that could perhaps develop into life at some point, or at least show the building blocks of life? Right now, the plan is for a suite of at least 9 instruments to do the work of figuring out exactly what kind of environment Europa has. And that's in terms of its surface, its subsurface environment, even down into the water, with the possibility of even being able to map the ocean floor, if you will.
Derek, on this June 1st, let's note that summer solstice is ahead this month. What's available to be seen in the night sky this week?
After the sun sets, get outside and take a look for Venus, because also we'll be able to watch as Venus creeps up the sky from Gemini across Cancer up close to Leo, where it will actually slide right up next to Jupiter on June 30th.
And when you catch sight of Jupiter, do you have to squint to see Europa?
I'm afraid you will, but if you have a telescope, you'll be able to see Europa and its 3 other Galilean moons without any difficulty at all. Very, very easy to see, even in large binoculars.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, sign up with Outer Space Ways Incorporated.
In October 2012, Superstorm Sandy ravaged businesses and homes up and down New Jersey. And now, the College of New Jersey is compiling firsthand accounts of Sandy. History professor Matthew Bender began the Oral History Project in 2013. Students have collected 66 accounts so far. They're hoping for 100 by the end of this month.
Our goal is to create a permanent collection of narratives that are available for future generations. So we intend for this to be an archive that in 50 years, someone who wants to look at Hurricane Sandy can look back and get a sense of what the storm meant in the lives of people who experienced it.
Government officials, residents, and business owners have shared their memories so far. Mike Carbone says things will never be the same at his restaurant in Seaside Heights.
People who lived here their whole lives don't live here anymore. And they just found a new place to live. And it's like, what are you going to do? Like, you rely in the off season on those people who are regulars, who are, you know, people, friendly faces, you know, that you see every day. They come in for a beer or two after work and, you know, you talk to them. And some of those people just haven't been back because their house is gone and they can't afford to rebuild it. And, they're living somewhere else now.
Toms River, Director of Public Works and first responder Louis Amoruso, says even more than 2 years after Sandy, he's still worried that another big storm could be just as crippling.
The biggest thing is our susceptibility to the natural disasters. And the biggest challenge that we had was a lack of effective communication because everybody relies on cell phones.
The College of New Jersey's Matthew Bender says his team will continue to chronicle stories, and you'll find a link to the project on newsworks.org. Comcast gives Philadelphia at least one homegrown company that's dominant in its field. But as Chris Cetullo asks in this week's Center Square commentary, how much longer can Comcast's reign last?
One day a short while ago, my wife and I were watching a network TV drama, The Good Wife, perhaps. A commercial came on. She said to me, "Come on, what are you doing?" "What?" I said, all innocent. "Why are we watching the commercials? Fast forward through." "Because, dear, I can't. We're watching live." She laughed out loud. "Goodness, when was the last time we did that?" Neither of us could remember. The revolution was televised, but we watched it the next day on DVR. In this wondrous age of Moore's Law, miracles and revolutions cascade down upon us steadily, quietly, like fluffy snowflakes. And we wake up one day to notice that the landscape has somehow been transformed. Comcast tries to buy Time Warner but fails. Now Charter Communications wants to buy both Time Warner and Bright House Networks in a deal unimaginably huge. So why are the masters of finance scrambling so to create even bigger media behemoths? Netflix, the analysts say. Netflix. Netflix, which didn't exist 20 years ago, which just a few years ago mostly mailed you DVDs in those little red packets, now seems to call a lot of the shots in digital entertainment. The producer of House of Cards makes long-established cable giants look like, well, a house of cards. Every one of us knows a cord cutter, someone who has no cable or satellite dish but still watches all the video entertainment they can handle via other means, from Netflix to Apple TV to Roku. Sometimes I wonder whether anyone other than a few Silicon Valley venture capitalists can keep up with this pace of change. Throughout the recent Philadelphia mayoral race, we journalists dutifully charted the fundraising for and the launching of political ads, as though they were the key to the campaign. But I kept asking myself, who the heck watches campaign ads anymore? I know I don't. I don't watch any ads, except Geico's, because they're funny. This seems to me to be one of the big stories to watch in the coming presidential extravaganza. A huge political apparatus dependent upon and lucrative for campaign consultants still assumes TV advertising drives election results. I doubt that's true anymore. But will any serious presidential candidate be bold enough to test that hypothesis? And if that person succeeded, what might that do to limit the malignant influence that big money plays on our politics? As we used to say in A Vanishing Age, stay tuned. I'm Chris Cetullo.
Chris Cetullo is WHYY's Vice President for News and Civic Dialogue. For this and other commentaries, check out newsworks.org. And finally this evening, Philadelphia's new bike share program is taking steps to draw more members a little over 1 month after it launched. Rides have increased from 8,000 in the first week to around 65,000 trips to date. But Cara Ferrantino from the Mayor's Office of Transportation and Utilities says the company is looking to attract even more users by offering the Independence Dollar Day deals.
So the purpose of the Independence Dollar Days is to provide Philadelphians with an extra incentive to give the bike share program a try and see how convenient it can be for getting around the city.
Now, typically a walk-up ride is $4 per half hour, though on the first Tuesday of every month it will drop to $1. Normal pricing will go into effect after the first half hour, and the deal does not extend to those who are already monthly members. Around 3,500 have signed up for that membership so far. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Benyakov and Kimberly Haas. The city of Chester is known for a high crime and poverty rate, not so much for the computer programs it produces. Tomorrow evening, we'll talk to one young woman from Chester who's working to change that. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Penn Museum supports WHYY. In 1940, Penn Museum excavated objects from the burial site of an ancient Panamanian chief, unearthing golden plaques, precious stones, painted ceramics, and more. In Beneath the Surface, Life, Death, and Gold in Ancient Panama, open now at the Penn Museum. Learn the story behind the excavation, the artifacts uncovered, and the mysterious Coclé people who lived, died, and buried their dead more than 1,000 years ago. Details at penn.museum.
Supporting WHYY, the Cooper Bone and Joint Institute, offering patients comprehensive osteoporosis care. From diagnosis and treatment to education and support groups, their specialists help patients keep their bones strong. Cooper's hospital program for those with fracture has been recognized for quality programming by the American Orthopedic Association. Offices are throughout South Jersey and in Newtown Square. For a consultation, cooperhealth.org/ortho or 1-800-8-COOPER.